The lamp, small, steadfast flame, no taller than a thimble, no prouder than a daisy, leaned in Molly's hand, as if it had opinions on geography. It pulled him from the lodging house court and out upon the broader page of London, where the night had begun to fold itself away with the efficient creaking dignity of a great theatre taking down its scenery after a triumph. Dawn in London is a miserly benefactor. It does not fling gold, it lends coppers. A rim of tarnished silver came first, prising up the fog with a spoon. The lamps which had done their night's duty and more blinked and yawned themselves to sleep. Milkmaids clattered pails as though they were ringing small bells for matins. Newspaper boys rehearsed the day's calamities with an energy that made them sound like entertainment. A far-off muffin man chimed his triangle until you could taste butter in the air. From a narrow arch, a sweet boy emerged with soot on his cheek like a premature mustache, and seeing his breath smoke, laughed to think he was a locomotive. Molly drifted through these dawnings as a clock's hand drifts, seen only when you look for it, always moving nonetheless. The lamp tugged him, not rudely but inexorably, toward a district of precise, parsimonious streets, where even the gnats seemed to fly in orderly columns. He knew the neighborhood by an old ache in his ghostly pocket, the ache that once had been a ledger there. Here, murmured Molly, as one speaks to his own guilt, I perfected the art of the reasonable cruelty. The lamp, which had no patience for speeches, tilted toward a door whose paint had been scrubbed so often by anxious hands that the wood in self-defense had learned to shine. The staircase within was a diagram of economy. Thin carpet, cautious polish, banister carefully kept from looseness by an army of discreet nails. At the summit, a passage held its breath, and in that hush rested the room he sought. The very room where the widow and her daughter had spent the night in innocent ignorance of deliverance. Molly entered the twine-mended chair, the penitent table, the kettle with ambitions beyond its water. These we have met, but now the miserly morning had set about counting them more kindly. A bar of daylight, no richer than pewter, slipped under the blind and drew a soft line along the seam of the floorboards. The kettle promoted began its low talk. The candle, swaggering on one leg of wick, put itself out with a sigh, feeling its night's work handsomely done. The two women slept in attitudes peculiar to the weary, the mother with the uprightness of one ready to meet disappointment standing up, the daughter curled like a comma at the end of a long sentence. A knock at the door, brisk, professional, almost apologetic, startled the room into attention. The daughter woke first, pushed the hair from her eyes, and looked to her mother with that little fluttering agitation daughters learn from watching bills arrive. Another knock, and the mother rose, tying her shawl, putting on a brave respectability as other women put on a hat. Who calls? She managed, opening the door as one opens a letter from an unknown hand. Half hope, half dread. A young man stood there, the very portrait of clerical neatness seen through spectacles of good intention. He held a leather folio as a priest holds a missal, reverently and in some awe of its contents. There was kindness in his face, though it appeared to have crept in recently and not yet found where to sit. Mrs. Wentworth, he began and then blushed, as if the name were too intimate a thing to say at a threshold. I am from Messrs. Scrooge and Cratchit, ma'am. At the name a tremor ran through the widow that made the shawl about her shoulders seem suddenly unequal to its officer. She said with dignity that knew its own threadbare state, we are too poor for jests. I would sooner juggle Bibles, said the young man, surprising himself with the boldness, than trifle with you, madam.